This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Hour number two of Bob, Groz, and Tom. A reminder that you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. We'll be speaking with Greg Amsinger coming up in a few minutes. We do have a big payoff today. Today's winner will have an opportunity to win two tickets to the Cage Sport MMA event. It's happening at the EQC Emerald Queen Casino in Tacoma on April 27th. Must be 21 or over to win. You can find tickets at Ticketmaster.com. And as I say every time, they do a great job with their shows out there. I'll be out there for that one.
21 or over? They don't let kids into those fights?
No, they're serving alcohol in there.
So, you don't have to serve the kids. I mean, what's going on here?
It's a casino.
Are we trying to appeal to kids?
Yeah, I don't think you're trying to bring the little ones
in
there,
Tom.
I don't think you're trying to do that. But, yeah, they always do. It's such a fun time out there. So, two tickets to that event coming up at the end of the show. So make sure you're paying attention to what's going on throughout the show. We're going to ask you a question. We're going to talk to Greg Amsinger here in just a few moments. One thing we didn't get to in the opening of the show is that deadline for Russell Wilson is fast approaching.
Monday.
What's new? We got anything new?
No, but I want a show of hands. Who thinks the deal gets done by Monday?
Nobody raised their hand.
That's what I thought. Nobody.
It was a great radio moment right there. Nobody raised their hands for those of you in your car going, I don't see.
Well, we're narrating.
Yeah. I mean, unless they're just hard at work and they're just not saying anything, they're not leaking anything, but they're putting their nose to the grindstone and getting this thing hammered out. Maybe, but it doesn't feel that way.
I'll tell you who I'll give a lot of credit to. Unless there's somebody else who has information that I haven't heard, Jake Heaps is the only one who's come out and said that there's not been many talks, that there's been the dialogue has been limited between the two sides. I've not heard that bit of information from anybody else, and I'm deciding to trust him on that. If that's true, then I'd be shocked if it got done by Monday.
Well, yeah. If there's been very little dialogue, it's not getting done by Monday. I mean,
unless it's one of those things where you can just pick up the phone and say, hey, $37 million, guarantee me 2 years, boom, we're done.
Right.
I don't think it's going to go that way.
If it got done that easily, then I would question why they didn't make that call earlier.
Well, again, I think deals require deadlines. That's a general truism in these things. Deals require deadlines.
Realistic ones, though. Otherwise, deadlines won't be met.
Right. You don't think this is a realistic one?
No. I think this was floated out there with him knowing that the Seahawks wouldn't be able to do it, A, and B, I don't think the Seahawks appreciate being told when they need to make the deal.
Well, because
deal
yesterday or
well, this
whenever
this
we
what happened the first time they did the deal, though. The first time they did the deal, Russell did the same sort of deadline.
Yeah, but it was before.
But he's not saying that I won't play.
I know, but he's saying
I don't want to talk anymore.
Right, I don't want to talk anymore. We'll deal with it next year, and it'll be an entirely different animal then.
Which is true.
Have you changed your stance on this, though?
No, it's the exact same stance.
We were talking the other day, and you said, well, how much time do they need? It's been 2.5 months. Like, saying that it's been more than enough time to get this
done. Yeah, to hash out the deal. But I don't think that they, because they're so far apart, I don't think it's going to happen.
We assume. We don't.
Well, I mean, if they're close, then I think it would be done.
Yeah,
if it's just a question of dotting T's and, excuse me, dotting I's.
You want to cross the T's, Tom.
Well, dot
the
I's. Not mine, in my
it's
native
guaranteed
language.
Guaranteed money, man. It's changing their philosophy. I wouldn't be surprised if all the numbers were done. They just can't get them to agree to guarantee enough money.
Maybe. I mean, that's
line
the problem.
That's the line in the sand.
We're all left to speculate.
Yeah, but how much guaranteed money are we talking about, Groz? That's holding this thing up. Is it $1 million, $2 million, $3 million? I mean, what is it?
Maybe he wants the whole contract guaranteed. It's not $1 million, $2 million, or $3 million. It's having a contract guaranteed for more than a year.
Well, if that's what it is, then it's not going to get done. I mean,
maybe not.
If the Seahawks were willing to do that, why wouldn't they have just done it already? Why do they need till April 15th to decide they're going to guarantee the money? They don't. That's not how they operate.
Yeah, it feels like if their intention is to sign him to a deal, then they should try to hammer that out now because it only gets more expensive. They can franchise tag, but even though that's – people say, well, it'd be what his guarantee would likely be. Well, but you can spread that out with a long-term deal. You can put it in the form of a signing bonus. You can manipulate the salary cap in a way that you cannot when you have a franchise tag. It has a much more dramatic impact on your salary cap when you talk about guaranteeing the $35 million or $33 million, whatever that number is going to be, it all counts that year against your salary cap versus, hey, he just signed a five-year deal, four-year, six-year, whatever it is, and here's this much in a signing bonus, and this much is prorated, this much is pushed to the back. I mean, they can do all this goofy things, all these goofy things with the salary cap that you need.
What's his number this year, by the way?
Cap guru to figure out.
What's he making, $21 million or so this year?
I'll look.
In that neighborhood?
What's your point?
Just curious as to what his number is this year.
His cap hit is $25
million. $25 million, okay.
Yeah.
No, I still maintain that this is about trying to get the Seahawks to change their philosophy. It's about guaranteed money.
If he wanted something, you know what, Grez, let's go with that for a second. If he really wanted, if it was about guaranteed money, and he wanted to run through that wall to be the first player to get that type of thing from the Seahawks, and he thought it was possible, why wouldn't he give them more time to flesh that out? Why would he say, you know what, not only do I want all this guaranteed money and guaranteed years, but you're going to do it by April 15th, not training camp? That seems like he's putting a lot on the Seahawks.
He's putting sure he is, forcing the deadline in negotiations for a deal that they probably don't want to do. Getting back to the original point, you know, for Russell Wilson, playing under the franchise tag is not a bad thing.
I agree, which is why I think he's going for that anyway.
Would be next year. So I think he probably is too. Or playing for the franchise tag for 2 years is not a bad thing.
Right, he's setting up a situation that the Seahawks can't handle so that he can get to that point.
But if they choose to, like Bob was talking about before, you know, you got to have something. You can't say, I'll do it under these circumstances, and the Seahawks say, all right, we'll agree, and then you can't go, well, no.
I was just kidding. Now I want more. I want a number you won't say yes to. Yeah, I mean,
I think their numbers, I think they're fine on the numbers. I think they're fine on all that. I think it's guaranteed, and I think that Tom may be right, that they may have an idea that they're never going to agree to change their philosophy on guaranteeing contracts.
We're going to guarantee you $38 million a year, 2 years, but we're not going to give it to you until May. You taking it?
Well, they're not going to change this year's contract.
Huh?
In other words, he's... any contract they had was pretty funny, man.
Sorry.
They're not going to redo this year's contract, obviously.
Right. Not this year's, no.
No, it'll be for next year's.
Right. What?
I
buckled him.
I'll say this. I hope it gets done because I'm tired of talking about it.
Really? You know what's funny? Groz, I'm usually with you on the NFL offseason thing. I think it can be incredibly tedious. This topic, though, since Russell threw the deadline, threw that monkey wrench into the whole thing, that made it interesting. Because I think now it's personal. I think Russell and his agent feel like that they can just control everything. You know what? I want it guaranteed. I want this. I want that. But I'm not even going to talk to you about it when OTAs start. That is a power move right there on the part of the quarterback.
Yeah, but you're assuming what he's asking for.
Well,
we
all agree that it's probably about guaranteed money, right? And
that's usually what it is.
He wants a better parking spot. I mean,
they know what they're going to have to pay for him. They got to be in the ballpark on numbers and things like that.
Yeah, the number attached to him can't be anywhere near a surprise. It's got to be about guaranteed money and them going against what is their stated philosophy of only guaranteeing that first year, and then you're guaranteed the salary after that when you are on the roster by a certain date.
You don't find this fascinating, Bob?
I do. I'm very intrigued by how this is going to play out. I mean, because we're left to speculate. There's no certainty on anything because he hasn't said anything. His agent hasn't technically said anything.
Nor have the Seahawks.
Maybe leak things through the media, but to this point, we're left to speculate. So we'll talk more about that. But right now we get a chance to speak to a guy, as I said earlier, maybe one of the most popular guests we ever have on this show.
Not a prophet of doom.
No, he's a voice of reason, by God. You see him on the MLB Network, and he's with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, one of our favorites. Greg Amsinger is back with us. Greg, how are you, man?
Bob, Tom, I miss your voices. I don't know if I've ever been on your show where I'm really not making anything up. The Mariners are great.
You say that now, and you're right now, but we all expected, Greg, based on what Jerry DePoto said, based on what Scott Servais said, based on all the moves that they made, sort of dismantling this team, that, okay, could be a bumpy ride. It's more about, in the words of DePoto and Servais, it's more about 2020, 2021. And then you come out this year, and here you are 13-2. How stunned are you?
When you mix and match as much as Jerry DePoto does, sometimes stuff will stick to the wall. and it looks like this group has stuck to the wall. I am totally shocked. Cano, Diaz gone, rebuild, ignite. The fact that they've got an outfield that right now, if I had to rank the best outfields in baseball, this is a top five outfield in the game. Haniger, Smith, Santana. I've always been a big Domingo Santana fan. The thing that's the biggest shock to me is the rotation doing what it's doing. You got a pair of six-foot lefties leading the staff. Marco Gonzalez, Kikuchi. These guys don't throw hard, right? Wade LeBlanc, three lefties. Mike Leake, King Felix is in the back end. This is so not what anyone expected. There are two gigantic stories in the game right now. In my opinion, the Red Sox are this bad, the defending World Series champs, and the Mariners are this good. I'm an optimist, so I would put the Red Sox the number two story in baseball, and the M's are number one.
Now, they're not going to play 800 ball all year, but can you see them maintaining playing winning baseball based on what you've seen so far, Greg?
Absolutely. I think starting pitching is the key. If they can average six innings a start from their staff, if these guys can give them length, the bullpen, if they're relevant around the trade deadline, which I know is a long time away, but if we're going to look into the crystal ball here, if they are relevant by the trade deadline, then they would be the primo candidate to go tinker and bring in and make some moves and trade some more trades for Jerry DePoto, which he loves doing, to bolster that bullpen, because I don't think it's got enough depth to be a playoff contending team. But what I like about the depth chart, there's upside almost everywhere. We haven't seen the best baseball from Mitch Haniger yet. Malik Smith is finally an everyday guy, and I love watching him play. We've never seen Domingo Santana be really anything but a platoon guy, and now he's an everyday guy, and he's one of the best run producers in the game. Tim Beckham, I feel like we still haven't seen the best of Tim Beckham. Is D. Gordon? Here's the funny part. The Mariners could be what the Yankees were a few years back. Remember, the Yankees were trading away their bullpen arms when they were still in the mix for a wild card berth. And everyone was like, what is going on? And then they were sellers. Then they kept winning. So they were sellers, and they were in the mix all the way to the end. I think you could see a Mariners team, because Jerry DePoto is not going to lose sight of what the big vision is here. I wouldn't be shocked if Jay Bruce is traded. I wouldn't be shocked if D. Gordon is traded. But yet they'll still be a competitive team. He's got to toe that tightrope. Because you can't just bail on the plan and then, lose the vision for the next 3 years. Because that is what this team wants to do. They want to be the Houston Astros. If you're going to be the Houston Astros, then you got to develop young talent. You got to give them an opportunity to play. Don't log jam a guy like Daniel Vogelback. He's got to hit more. He's got to play more. I don't care if a lefty's on the mound. He's got to play more. So Encarnacion, your days might be done. There's going to be a weave that goes on here in that front office to be competitive and to continue to look into the future, and it's going to be fun to watch.
The thing is, with Bruce and Encarnacion, I agree. Encarnacion's the name out there that I think, even if he's not even playing that well, his name carries value. But what do you think that they could get in return for him that would make it worth it to ship him out?
Young pitching. I think when you're looking at a guy like Edwin Encarnacion, slugging in the game, it's hard to find. We're doing a segment tonight on MLB Tonight. Guys, the sluggers that have lost the slug, Miguel Cabrera, bye-bye. You're not going to see 30 home runs from him anymore. Buster Posey, bye-bye. You're not going to see 20 home runs from him anymore. There are guys like this. And Encarnacion, I don't think, fits that mold yet. There is still slug in Edwin Encarnacion. So you will see teams that the San Diego Padres, for example, a National League team, he's been playing some first base, that might go, we need to bolster our roster a little bit, maybe a bat off the bench. All you're looking for here, if you're the Mariners, one prospect. You want one young pitching prospect that's got upside. You need to figure out ways to get three of those by the end of the year. I think it's fixated on starting pitching. And I think Jerry DePoto looks at it that way. If you can find a way to get two or three Marco Gonzalez's, which isn't the 100-mile-an-hour right arm that stands 6'8", and no one can, not everyone can get Tyler Glasnow, But if you can get some guys like that to give your staff more depth, because the Felix days are just about over. You know, Mike Leake, how long is Mike Leake going to be a productive guy? You got to look to the future while you're still competing. A 13-2 record is quite the cushion early on. You're not going to win a division in the month of April. Totally get it. But you've got now room and space to tinker and to take phone calls on Edwin Encarnacion and not freak out that Kyle Seager's hand's going to keep him out until June. You got Ryan Healy over there doing a great job. So things are working out for the Mariners in their long vision, but they can't lose sight of what they need to do, which is trade the older guys to get some young arms in that staff.
Hey, I don't think we've ever spoken to you about Daniel Vogelbach in the previous conversations we've had, because he's mostly been a minor league player, and he's a guy that I admit I've been extremely critical of. I hated the trade the day they made it. Montgomery was a guy who was producing for this team. He went on to help the Cubs win their World Series, in fact, standing on the mound when they clinched it. And Vogelbach, for not a ton of opportunity, but enough to where you go, he looks overmatched. He goes and mashes at the minor league level, comes up here, just wasn't happening, and now this is a completely different version of him. How much did you pay attention to him before and versus what you're seeing now? What's the difference? What changed with him in your eyes?
You know, the swing is very short and compact. Bob Hamlin is a great comp. If you go back in the old days, the former Cub wore bifocals while he hit. Big, slugger from the left side. I love the way he chokes up on the bat. Big power guy. All he has to do is touch it. What scouts were kind of comparing him to was he was a watered down. I don't want to say watered down because he's bigger. But he was a poor man's Kyle Schwarber. You know, Kyle Schwarber is a really good athlete, even though he's been a liability in the outfield. He can at least play that position out there, a former catcher. Vogelbach's giving you nothing defensively. He is purely a slugger. But that power, that easy power, while the body doesn't look like it's going to age well, there's a chance that swing, being as simple as it is, could. And I think that is what's got so many scouts excited, and some of our experts here in the building look at this guy and they go, whoa, this guy's figuring himself out. When you have something that you cannot teach, in this case it's raw power, you're kind of waiting on the guy to just, you know, what's that one thing that gets him motivated and confident to go to the yard and feel like he's going to take Jacob deGrom yard? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like lefties. You got to be patient with left-handed pitchers. For some reason, mentally, they're just out there. Vogelbach's a left-handed slugger. I put him in the same category. He's huge. There's really no one like him. But if he does figure it out, watch out. And right now, we're watching what he's putting out there, and it is so fun. This is what the Mariners were looking for. They're looking for that flash in the pan, no one expected 40-homer guy. And now you got control of this 40-homer guy. I know he hasn't hit 40 homers yet, but it looks like it's in the tank. So I make sure he gets more opportunity. There's going to be swing and miss. Live with that. It could be, you know, we might be looking at the next Chris Davis with a C, or as I like to call him these days, Chris Davis with a backwards K.
Yeah, geez. One of the guys, you talked about a guy who's trying to make it in Vogelbach, but Marco Gonzalez has certainly shown the stuff to be a top-flight pitcher, hasn't he?
He has. The Cardinals are looking back at that deal. I know Tyler O'Neill's got a ton of talent, vast for his strength as well. But Marco Gonzalez, I remember the day he was drafted coming out of Gonzaga, he was quick to the big leagues. Your scouts say that all the time. Pitchability off the charts. One of the nicest kids you're ever going to meet. Smart, studies the game, works well with his battery mate, looks at the defense, knows where to pitch based on his infielders. He's not going to strike everyone out, but man, he's steady Eddie. You need a guy like that that's going to come out and give you a quality start. The Mariners starting pitching has just really surprised me. To me, it's one of the bigger stories, along with the team success. The fact that Marco Gonzalez is the number one pitcher in this rotation, and he's 4-0, and every time he gets the ball and his body language, I've said this before, Wade LeBlanc impressed me when he went over to Seattle. Guys that all of a sudden breed confidence on the mound, and it's easy to see because they're on a stage. You know, they've got the baseball, the game is in their hands, and there are certain guys that you just love their body language. Jeff Samardzija right now, his body language is different than it's been ever since he was a San Francisco Giant. There's a bounce to the way he catches the ball from the catcher. Marco Gonzalez has got that right now. It's going to be fun to see what kind of year he puts together. He could be the next Jimmy Key. That could be the kind of pitcher he is.
I love that we've had a Jimmy Key and a Bob Hamlin, former Rookie of the Year.
Play with the Royals.
Yeah, the Royals, exactly. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm a nerd. I'm a huge baseball nerd, guys. That's basically what it means.
You know what? Does it make you feel old to know that Dee Gordon is a veteran player and his father is Tom Flash Gordon? Like, he was pitching in 2004. I mean, that makes me feel ancient.
I was just having this thought, right? All of these players, like Mike Trout is, you know, 27, 28, and I was there the day he was drafted when he was an 18-year-old kid in Studio 42. And I'm like, well, I still have like 3.5 years left on my contract. I'm probably never going anywhere. I'm going to live through his entire professional baseball career.
Right.
You know? I'm just thinking to myself, like, wow. I feel like, you know, an eighth grade history teacher where time flies because all these kids go through your class and then they all come back with kids and you're like, you're old enough to have a kid? And you're like, I feel like teachers and time, it just flies by because all of these kids go through your class. I feel the same way about baseball. I'm covering these guys every single day, talk about them year round, and they're all getting older, and all of a sudden I'm looking at Ian Kinsler's 36? What?
Yeah, no kidding.
It's crazy to me, and now I'm almost 40, and there shouldn't be anyone on the field that's my age.
Well, Ichiro's not on the field anymore, so you're safe for now. Hey, Greg,
right.
Before we let you go, just a quick thought on Felix. We've seen him in two appearances. One was pretty good, decidedly better than I think what anybody expected based on what he's been the past few years in his spring. And then his last one where apparently he had food poisoning or flu-like symptoms, whatever you want to call it, but he got off to, you know, a rough start, 3 hits, 2 runs in one inning. What we've all sort of speculated, all right, is he going to make it through the year? Are they going to give him 5-6 starts before they figure out what they're going to do? What would you do with Felix? What are your expectations for him?
I think you hear this expression, a top-step closer, right? I think he's a top-step starter, and he should be managed that way. His first start of the year, I was not a fan of the fact he came out into the sixth inning. I'm not a fan of that. I don't want him to give me a quality start if I'm the Seattle Mariners. I want 5 innings from Felix Hernandez. If he gives me 5 innings, I don't care if his pitch count is under 70. If we're within 1 or 2 runs and he has somehow produced 5 innings of work, I'm done. I want him feeling good. I know the bullpen's going to be ready. Everyone's on the edge of their seat. But this is where he is now in his career. He knows this is it for his $170-plus million contract. I still think he's got a lot of integrity. I think he looks at himself as a future Hall of Famer because of the things he's accomplished in his storied career, which started at the age of 19. But he wants to compete. I mean, Kings Court is still loud and proud, which is an awesome scene. So just don't overexpose him. If he's not feeling well, look, I had a great conversation with Mike Matheny once, and I said, man, you're getting a lot out of Carlos Beltran. Why do you think you are? And he goes, you know, there are certain players that every single day you walk up and you go, hey, Carlos, how are we feeling today? And if he's like, you know, great, Skip, feeling really good, I'll put him in the lineup. If I go, hey, Carlos, how are you feeling today? No matter if he's on a 12-game hitting streak and he's tearing the cover off the ball, he's like, you know, my calf is just, I woke up today just a little bit sore, but I'm good, Skip. He's not playing. Mm-hmm. Whatever that little thing is, he's not playing. So Felix not feeling well for his second start, we're skipping a start, Felix. You're good. Don't you worry about it, King Felix. There are certain players that if you want to get the most out of them, there's coddling that needs to be involved. At this stage of the game, he's no longer a horse. He's no longer an ace. He's a top-step starter. And if you manage him well, he could still be productive in the 5 spot.
He is Greg Amsinger of the MLB Network. A reminder, you can watch Greg host MLB Tonight coming up at 3 o'clock Pacific Time. Plus, MLB Network is featuring live baseball every day for the rest of April for all of you baseball nerds out there, including tomorrow afternoon's Orioles game against the Red Sox. So, great stuff. Greg, Seattle would love to adopt you. You're huge out here. I just need you to know.
Hey, man, there's a price for everything, fellas, okay? So let's just get all your listeners together, throw some money in the pot, and I'll relocate. Anything's possible.
Well, we love having you on, man. We always appreciate you taking time with us, and hopefully we're talking again real soon. Thanks as always, man.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's not be strangers, okay, guys?
All right. There you go. There he is, Greg Amsinger from MLB Network. Love talking to that guy.
Good stuff.
Hey, speaking of feeling old, you know who's in the West Virginia power lineup tonight? That's a Mariners minor league team. Cesar Isturiz Jr. Yet another son of a...
Was that a Dodger?
Yeah. Son of another guy who I feel like has only been in the league for 8 years, who's not in the league anymore.
You guys are getting old fast. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, coming up, will there be hard feelings between Russell and the Seahawks, even if a deal does get done by Monday? Talk about that next. It is the Halftime Show with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over.
Presented by VenueKings.com.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Bob, Roz, and Tom.
You are unbelievable. You are unbelievable.
Why is that?
You should see what Bob was late getting back into the room, which is fine. But what he just threw down here on the counter.
Toothpaste.
And a toothbrush.
and a full cup of water. Not just some water, but a full, almost to the brim cup of water.
Why is that unbelievable?
To wash it all out.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It just is.
It's my routine. You know that.
Yeah.
Bob, you are a creature of habit.
I am that.
Nothing if not a creature of habit.
Mostly good habits.
Right. That's right. Yeah. After the coffee, it's the brushing of the teeth, get the water. It's all good. It's all good. Hey, coming up in 15 minutes, we'll be taking your questions, any question on any topic you've got. Doesn't matter, sports or otherwise. Text it in, 710-710, Coors Light text line. Have an opinion already, we'll be coming up. But we asked the question, are there going to be hard feelings between Russell and the Seahawks, even if a deal does get done by Monday, which is exactly what happened last time. They got the deal done, and there were hard feelings.
Why were there
and
hard
it didn't
feelings?
Make any difference.
Well, why were there hard feelings last time?
I don't know if it was ever specifically stated. Okay. That was just, it could be a lot of what's going on now. I don't know.
Look, negotiations are tough. Once you get through them, you go on and you do your job and whatever. Russell's not going to go dog it because he thought the Seahawks lowballed him.
Right.
Well, I don't think it was between Russell and the Seahawks. I think it was more between the Seahawks and Russell's agent.
I don't think that has any bearing whatsoever on anything. Let there be bad feelings.
But what if that means he's more likely to force his way out later on? I want good feelings between my quarterback or anybody on my team and the team itself, don't you?
NFL, you don't have to worry about it. You got control.
You
control want guys
of what?
To be of the player.
No, you don't. Antonio Brown just forced his way out of Pittsburgh because he was carrying on all offseason.
You see Russell Wilson doing that?
I don't know. If it got bad enough, maybe.
I don't ever see him doing that.
Maybe not the exact same way, but maybe he could find another way out. I mean, there's this rumor to the Giants thing isn't out there for nothing.
Well, it might be. Someone may have just come up with a good rumor.
His agent.
Okay.
I think it feels like it's all done to get this thing rolling. Like maybe it wasn't going at the pace he felt it should, so okay, I'm going to put this rumor out there that, you know, New York's a possibility. Sierra wants to live out there. He wants to maybe give the Seahawks a taste of what it would be like not to have him or something. You know, just deal with that idea of him not being here. Okay, that didn't work. All right, well, here's a deadline.
I don't want my quarterback feeling slighted by the team and vice versa. You know what happens when you get into that situation? Mike McCarthy, he gets kicked out. It's either him or it's the quarterback. And they held on to the quarterback in that situation, but somebody's going to go.
Yeah, to me, this just feels like negotiation. I don't know. Maybe there might be hard feelings again. They lived through it before. I'm guessing they'll do it again. I don't expect all of a sudden they're going to be friends and hanging out and having dinner and talking again about the reps, not Russell himself.
Mm.
Right.
I don't think there's any tension between him and Schneider or him and Pete.
Him and Pete get along great.
Yeah. So I think this is strictly, you know, management and his representative. And at the end of the day, Mark Rogers works for him. You know,
and he's
going to
get paid.
If this starts going the wrong way, Russell's got the ability to step in and go, wait a minute. Let's you know, tap the brakes here for a minute. If it starts getting very toxic feeling or it's going to create animus, there's going to be hard feelings.
Who do you think set the deadline, Mark Rogers or,
yes,
Russell, or Russell Wilson?
I think Mark probably is pulling the strings there. Russell's got to sign off on it. He's not going to go, do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah, he's,
I think he's going to trust him.
It.
He's going to trust him. You know, and Mark's probably telling him something. Hey, this is how things get done. You got to set a deadline. You've got to have some urgency.
Well, we did the last time, and it worked the last time. In this case, maybe they don't, like you said, Tom, maybe he doesn't want it to work. Maybe he wants the franchise tag. If I'm Russell Wilson, I want to play under a franchise tag next year.
I agree. If that's the plan, then everything that Mark Rogers does and says, Russell Wilson has to be in lockstep with. This isn't just, oh, yeah, just go do what you're going to do. This is we are partners on this. Rodgers is the spokesperson. He makes the deal. Russell's not in that room. But they are thinking and doing the exact same things the whole way.
That's what your agent should be.
Story number two. Mariners just win. That's all they do.
No matter how. Even every way. Come from behind, sure.
Even when your starter goes out there and has a bad day. It was not a good day for Mike Leake yesterday.
No way.
5 innings, 4 runs, all earned, 2 walks.
A couple of long dingers.
3 home runs. It was just it was a bad day for Leake. So it just felt like, all right, they're not going to win every game. This is one of those games. It doesn't matter that it's the Royals. It's hard to beat any team 4 in a row. You took the first 3.
They're trash.
Then what? They get 2 in the 6th to make it 4-2.
Yeah, they scored basically in every inning after the 5th. They scored 2 in the 6th, 1 in the 7th, 1 in the 8th, 2 in the 9th, 1 in the 10th.
Was Mitch Haniger's triple, was that the one that went off Hamilton's glove?
Yes.
Why does that count as a triple? Why is that not an error?
They're in Kansas City, I suppose.
It wasn't routine.
It wasn't a Domingo Santana play where he just flipped the mitt up there and it pops out.
Exactly. I understand the difference between
I think it was a hometown call.
Okay.
I think it could have been an error, definitely.
Because he didn't have to, I mean, he was running, but he didn't have to go that far out of his way. It wasn't like he was diving. He was just running to get the ball.
But it wasn't routine. He had to cover a lot of ground, and he was stretched out.
You expect that to be an out, though, wouldn't you? When that ball's in the air, you're thinking, all right, he's going to get
there. With his speed, I thought he had it.
Yeah, that should be, that to me should be an error.
But it wasn't a routine play, and then he ends up getting carted off there, so.
Yeah.
I saw some Twitter speculation that maybe he was
embarrassed,
hamming it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's what you always think, right? After you feel like you've screwed something up, you see a guy out there.
Oh man, it hurts.
Oh boy, if not for this injury, I would have had that ball.
But he's going to stay in the game.
Yeah, you don't want to be thinking out of the game.
Yeah, so I haven't seen any reports on his progress after that, but that was huge. And Haniger, as much as we looked at him, said, "Yeah, he's not really caught on yet. He's not on fire. He's come up with a big home run, obviously, and then that was huge."
Yeah.
And I think Service, even after the game, gave credit to that more than Vogelbach.
So did Vogelbach. Yeah. Vogelbach did the same thing in his post-game interview. So did Haniger's at bat.
So the biggest test of the season so far starts tonight. The Houston Astros, who are just as hot, they've won 6 in a row. Mariners have won 6 in a row. Astros are in town for 3 games in which you're going to see Miley, Verlander, and Cole.
5-1-2, right? The Astros rotation?
I believe so.
Probably's got to be their 5th starter.
The Mariners can win close games, though.
They have.
That plus 42 run differential, that's fine, that's fun. 12-4 games, I'll take them. But 9 of their 13 wins have been by 3 runs or less. That makes me comfortable going into this series. And not all of them have been, 10-8.
Astros 2-5 on the road, by the way.
Well, so they got let's that make it 2-8.
Which is nice.
Let's make it 2-8. All right, we're going to take your questions. Any questions you've got, any topic, sports or otherwise, as I said, is fine. Just text it in. 710-710 is the Coors Light text line. Have an opinion already is coming your way next with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is Have an Opinion Already on the Bob Gross and Tom Show. 3 loudmouths, 3 questions, and 1 giant tub of hand sanitizer. Right, Bob? Let's get it on.
Let's get it on, baby. This means...
Nope. Try again.
Let's get it on.
Question one.
Why are all coaches called coaches, but managers in baseball are called skippers?
I don't know where it originated from, but it's just part of that baseball tradition, like calling it a locker room elsewhere, but it's a clubhouse in baseball.
Hey, Skip.
Hey, Skip.
Good question.
Yeah, they don't like to be called coach, that's for sure.
Well, you have coaches.
Yeah, you got a third base coach.
Right, bullpen
first base coach. Yeah.
Maybe we can get the bullpen coach on one day. What do you think, Bob? Think maybe we're
I think that's
big enough to have them on.
I think that's within our grasp.
Might be busy. Next.
Question two.
Who is the bullpen coach around here anyway?
I don't know, but I'm guessing you'll find out when it's suggested to you.
Does this high-powered offense make you want the Mariners to bring up Sheffield later in the season to help him out of the rotation or the bullpen?
Want them to stick with their plan. Their plan was to bring him up this year. Stick with it.
What do you mean?
What their plan was going into the year shouldn't change.
You know what? I thought the same thing when I read the question, Gross. Then I had visions of K-Rod who was brought up in like September, only pitched in five games for the Angels, and there was money in the playoffs. Also, remember Jarrett Wright?
Yeah.
Yes.
With the Indians, he came up and just blew everybody away in 97.
He ended up pitching for the Yankees for a bit.
Yeah. In like 2005-ish, right around there. He was always hurt, though. Him and Carl Pavano.
Carl Pavano. Got hit in the backside.
Former Mariner pitching coach, I think.
Carl Pavano?
I believe so.
Huh.
Did he get hit in the glute with a comebacker, and he was...
Was that what his injury was? I don't even remember.
I believe that was one of his injuries.
Pride of Southington, Connecticut. Next.
Question three.
My neighbor yelled at me for having the Mariners game on the radio as I was grilling outside with friends. What do you do in that situation? Me? I turned it up.
I'm going to shut his pie hole. His team's 13-2.
How loud could it have possibly been?
Yeah, that'd be my question.
It must have been blasting.
Maybe they were yelling along with the game as they were coming back, and there was a lot of, joy and mirth.
Well, get used to it.
Definitely get used to it.
That's a good feeling when you're walking around the streets and you can hear radios, TVs coming through the screens because your windows are open.
Windows.
It's summertime. That's a great baseball thing.
Sure is. Not a football thing.
Regarding Russell Wilson, is there a tax incentive to having his contract finalized by April 15th?
I don't think so, because you assume would still be playing on his final year.
Right.
And his extension would kick in next year.
Plus, there's no state income tax in Washington anyway, so would that factor in at all? No.
I think they pay when they play in different cities, though.
You mean the game checks?
Yeah. I think they get that state's taxes taken out, I believe, is how that works.
Mm. By the way, you were talking before, Bob, about how great the at-bats have been up and down the lineup.
Yep.
Shannon Dreyer has a great piece at 710sports.com. You guys should all check that out.
About that?
Difference between this year's team and other teams.
Touching on that subject?
Yeah, that exact
that
thing.
That was actually in the press release, my friend. The
entire lineup. Just giving them great at-bat after great at-bat.
Who are all-stars on this team, potentially?
Right now?
The whole starting
Santana's
lineup?
Santana's an all-star right now.
If you're going now, it'd be Vogelback.
Vogelback's 400. An all-star right now.
Beckham.
I mean, Encarnacion would have to be.
Yeah, if you're just...
Does Haley still lead the league in extra base hits?
He might.
I don't know. I mean, Marco.
Yeah.
Marco would be starting that game.
Sure. At least four.
You guys
kind of leads in RBIs, doesn't he?
Lead a league?
Yeah, I believe so.
You guys get Swarzak and Sadzak mixed up? Because I sure do.
Yeah, because neither are familiar. I mean, it's not like we've been talking about these guys for years. Santana, leads the American League with 19. Tied for Major League Baseball. Cody Bellinger has 19 driven in as well.
When Amsiger was talking about the top five outfields in all of Major League Baseball, he wasn't talking defensively.
No.
No.
Not to take anything away from Mitch and Malik.
Is good and Haniger is good, too.
Yeah, right. Not unless he's just not seen Santana in the outfield.
Right.
I don't feel an overwhelming sense of comfort with his defense.
No. But in terms of offensive production.
You got a good, Haniger's solid. Offensive production, definitely.
Yeah, I like him in the batter's box. So far, I've not been dazzled by his defense in these 15 games.
Don't expect to be.
Somebody's saying here, they used to think that only the Mariners called their manager a skipper because it made sense because the Mariners are nautical-themed. Like whether they're a pilot or a Mariner.
That's
a
Seattle thing.
It's a Seattle thing only.
No, that's
baseball. It's a baseball thing.
You know what, though? If you're a kid, that's a great assumption to make.
Yeah. Seems inobvious, right?
Yeah, it shows critical thinking. Is the 90s NBA underrated?
90s NBA?
No, I'd say if anything, it's overrated.
It was fun.
It was great.
What was the best decade of the NBA?
My opinion, the 80s.
Was it the 80s?
Bird Magic.
Well, for me, it was the 90s.
Yeah, I think it was probably, for me, it was like late 90s. It all depends
Bird
on
Magic
what...
was an awesome era.
Yeah.
The Pistons. Passing was king.
You know what the difference was, Graz, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. Up to a certain point, weren't a lot of those games, playoff games, tape delayed? Like, media coverage got better
in the
90s.
Absolutely. Magic Johnson's first championship game against the Sixers was tape delayed.
Right. In the 90s, you didn't really have to worry about that as much.
Jordan took care of that.
Yeah. Oh. I don't know about this question. I'll read it anyway. Because we were talking about how the Mariners, the Astros, and the Angels have all won six in a row, six.
Yeah, pointed that out last night.
If the devil promised you a World Series win for Seattle, but you had to accept an earthquake the following week, do you take it?
Is it a mini one? Nobody gets hurt?
Just
no,
a tremor?
No real destruction?
It's the devil, yeah. Bob. He's not going to promise a little tremor.
Devil's not
devil because he's the devil.
It has to be worth his while.
Maybe he's the devil.
Maybe he's in a good mood. He's
the devil's never in a good mood.
I just want to put a little scare into people. I don't. We're not going to go massive devastation. We'll just go a little scare. If it's a little scare, I'm in. Outside of that, I'm out.
I don't want an earthquake.
I'm out.
I don't want to make deals with the devil.
No. Like Led Zeppelin did. Didn't they have like a seance where they got together with the devil and they said, "Give us success and we'll pay you back with whatever, with our lives."
I don't know.
I think they did. How else do you get away with stealing everybody else's work?
Okay. Come on.
That's a great Homer Simpson line.
What?
There's Jimmy Page, the greatest thief of black music in the history of music.
Exactly. How else do you get away with it?
All right. Coming up, how much communication has there actually been between Russell and the Seahawks? We'll talk to the professor, John Clayton, about that. He joins us next with Bob Gros and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.